This is Serenade Radio with the best in easy listening. Now here's Mark Stein with Stein's Song of the Week.
As I've mentioned before, Ira Gershwin liked to cite the Encyclopaedia Britannica definition. Song is the joint art of words and music, two arts under emotional pressure coalescing into a third. And we've played many songs that exemplify that. But what happens if they don't coalesce? This is one of my favourite melodies. Is that the all-time great operetta tune? Maybe the all-time great waltz tune? Franz Lehár from his great score for The Merry Widow. And yet, when you add words, they don't seem to add anything at all.
Golden glowing lamps are throwing light above, while the swaying tune is saying, love, 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 and the feet of dancers sounded as they go. Don't you hear them say, my dear, I love you so?
Golden glowing lamps are throwing light above. It's a waltz, you're dancing, you're in each other's arms. It's romance distilled to its essence at its most intimate and intense. And yet all the lyricist can do is detail the furnishings and fittings. It doesn't express the emotion, it merely describes the scene. And the feet of dancers sound it as they go. So they're a bit heavy-footed, are they, drowning out the strings? Jane Morgan has the gift of being able to make old-fashioned songs sound very real. Listen to her sing Fascination, for example. But here, the throwing of the golden glowing lamps defeats her. Want to give it one more try, Jane?
Golden glowing lamps are throwing light above, while the swaying tune is saying, love, 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 and the music answers, swaying to and fro, telling you it's true. I love you.
Franz Leha is one of Hungary's very greatest composers, although if you're Hungarian, you probably know him as Ferenc Leha. Or actually, now I come to think of it, Leha Ferenc, because they put the last name first in Hungary. He was born in 1870 to an Hungarian mother and Austrian father, a bandmaster in the Imperial military, in what's now Slovakia, but was then in the Kingdom of Hungary. It's that part of Middle Europa where borders are shifting and tentative. Young Ferenc spoke nothing but Hungarian till the age of 12 and added the accent to his surname to conform to the Hungarian style. But it was Vienna that made him a star everywhere. Great liner's maiden voyage, the Titanic, and disaster has struck. But in the first-class dining saloon, the band plays on as the lifeboats are loaded for the women and children. And there are surely worse ways to meet your maker than with a cigar, a brandy, and the strains of Franz Leha. The Merry Widow spread from Vienna to Berlin and Hamburg, then to London and finally Broadway on a spectacular opening night at the New Amsterdam Theatre. Across profound generational shifts in popular taste, it remains to this day the most performed operetta of all time, which at the time of its birth, 1905, December 30th, was a more competitive title than you might think. The Merry Widow announced herself to the world from the most distinguished musical address in Vienna, the Theater an der Wien. This was where Mozart's Magic Flute was premiered and Die Fledermaus, the theater's first hit operetta, from Strauss to Leha. This one house introduced and exported the Gypsy Baron, the Beggar Student, the Countess Maritza, the Count of Luxembourg, the Count of this, the Countess that, the Beggar Baron of the other, more minor nobility than you'd find in the Almanach de Gotha. Welcome to Middle Europa, where it's always springtime in your heart and lilacs bloom in your ventricles, where every widow is merry and every hussar gay, where two hearts can beat in three-quarter time for between 5/6 and 7/8 of the day. 9? Yes, the eponymous widow Hannah hails from a fictional kingdom. Don't worry about which one, because even by the standards of Central and Eastern Europe, it changes its name a lot. Hannah and Count Danilo were citizens of Pontevedro in the original Vienna production. Then Marsovia, London, 1907. Next, Monte Blanco, the silent film version. And Marsovia, the film remake, 1934. Relax, they've all hightailed it out of there for the delights of Paris. The Merry Widow revived Viennese theatrical fortunes in Paris, London, and New York and launched the so-called Silver Age of operetta. At the dawn of the 20th century, it was the only show to approach internationally the scale of the Andrew Lloyd Webber blockbusters at the end of the century. At one point, there were over 100 productions of the show around the world. And just like Cats and Phantom, they sold a lot of product off the back of it. Here's Andrew with me in his lovely garden at Sidmonton, underlining the point.
That's really what you can't take away from the Merry Widow. It's got marvellous tunes, and it was obviously a huge success in its day. They were very clever with all their Merry Widow dolls and all of that.
The hats, Merry Widow hats.
Yeah, so it was apparently the first musical that did have merchandising. I think Cameron Mackintosh has learned everything he knew from it.
Right.
Merry Widow broad-brimmed hats and gowns and gloves and corsets and trains and cocktails and cigarettes filled the store windows of Manhattan in a spin-off campaign unsurpassed until the Brit hit blockbusters of the 1980s. Within 2 years of the premiere, Franz Lehár was a multi-millionaire and wound up richer than any other Viennese composer ever, which is impressive when you consider those ranks include not only the entire Strauss family, but also Beethoven and Mozart. Unlike most operetta composers who spent like their characters trying to impress a wealthy Margravine at a Viennese ball, Franz Lehár managed to hold on to his money. The indestructibly vivacious Einzi Stoltz, widow of the much-married Robert Stoltz, composer of White Horse Inn, knew Lehár well and gave me this lovely glimpse of a night out with the most flush composer in town.
The other composers, like Franz Lehár or Emmerich Kallmann, were altogether different characters. They did not do much for the enjoyment of their life. For instance, Lehár, when he went to a restaurant, very, very seldom did he. He never looked at the left side of the menu, what he can order, but always on the right side, what was the cheapest. And that is what you ordered.
When you dine with Lehár, no à la carte. It's the set menu or nothing. That doesn't really seem in the spirit of operetta, does it? The plots are silly and frothy, and yet amongst the silliest and frothiest, there is music of great truth and beauty. And none more beautiful than that accompanying an embassy ball scene in which a Balkan widow is swept into the arms of a minor diplomat. Andrew Lloyd Webber loves this tune.
Why does that work? It isn't actually just that. It's the fact that the tune then develops. The fact that he goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He just changes, he alters it very slightly. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's perfectly rounded, perfectly formed.
At one point that day, when Andrew was demonstrating how perfectly formed the tune is, I said, "You're doing an awful lot of da-dee-da-dee-dying." And he said, "Well, I don't think I know the words." And from deep within the corner of my brain, where I store unsatisfactory lyrics, I dredged up the line, "Every touch of fingers." Touch of fingers, said Andrew. If that's what the words are like, I'm glad I don't know them. So what do these men have in common? Gus Kahn.
It had to be you. It had to be you.
Lawrence Hart.
I'm wild again. Beguiled again.
Paul Francis Webster.
The shadow of your smile. When you are gone.
Oh, and one more, Adrian Ross.
Just a little.
Denver, the guy who had the hit with Whim Away. Okay, not quite in the class of It Had to Be You, but those fellas, Gus Kahn, Larry Hart, Paul Francis Webster, and even Adrian Ross, had no problem writing love songs in other situations. Yet all took a crack at the Merry Widow waltz, and all failed. to articulate the irresistible, heady perfume of the tune. Adrian Ross in the very first English production, London, 1907.
Oh, I see not what I mean, I'm glad you hear.
Though I say not what I may not let you hear. Well, that's just treading water and sounds like somebody aimlessly singing along to an instrumental. What about Lawrence Hart, one of the greatest lyric writers of all time? The 1934 Ernst Lubitsch film with Jeanette MacDonald and Maurice Chevalier is one of the very few occasions in his short life when he put words to music other than that of Richard Rodgers. You want Lehar and Hart to be as bound together as Rodgers and Hart. But words may be unspoken, music sighs, the heart replies. That may be true. But for a lyricist, it's kind of an admission of defeat. Perhaps the moment in Lubitsch's film that best captures the mystery of the tune and its power is the big dance scene, Miss MacDonald and Maurice Chevalier, a chilly conversation, until a melody lets them and us know how they really feel about each other.
Well, if I'd only known that I held in my arms the richest widow I... What did you come to Maxim's for anyway? Oh, I see. Just a rich woman looking for a thrill.
Goodbye, Captain.
And Lubitsch captures that transformation in the contrast between the grand sweep of the ball with its untold legions of waltzing couples and Chevalier and MacDonald dancing alone in each other's arms through empty rooms, the complete absorption of love amid all the public revelry. Before The Merry Widow, theatre choreography had meant marches, drills, ballets, big chorus set pieces. The Widow introduced dancing not by dancers hired to distract, but by the actual principals in the drama. And though neither Lehar nor anyone else ever accomplished it again to such dizzying effect as here, The Merry Widow changed the way composers thought about dance, establishing a line that led through Vernon and Irene Castle, America's preeminent dance team in the run-up to the Great War, to Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and beyond. With a single melody, Lehar transformed dance from a group social activity to the most potent dramatic expression of romance. The traditional emotional trajectory of the American musical can be seen in any Fred and Ginger picture. They talk, and then when they reach an emotional point beyond speech, they sing, and then when they reach an emotional point beyond song, they dance. In The Merry Widow, Lehar makes that journey by music alone. The soul of Viennese operetta died with the Habsburg Empire, so The Merry Widow is both the last waltz, a final fling for the Ancien Régime, and simultaneously the first great theatre courtship in dance, the first modern waltz. How broad was its appeal? So broad that it exemplifies the limitations of popular culture. Today, the Western world likes to reassure itself that its cultural exports, superhero movies and gangster rap, will eventually tame the fevers of its enemies. Yet over a century ago, The Merry Widow was both an American pop culture phenomenon and the favorite operetta of Adolf Hitler. Again and again, the teenage Adolf would return to the gallery at the Theatre an der Wien and sit rapt. His love for the show never diminished, notwithstanding that both librettists were Jewish, as was the composer's wife. And a fat lot of good a shared taste for Franz Lehár did the world, all those Jewish librettists. Under the Reich, Lehár was Hitler's favourite musician and thus untouchable. And as for his wife, whom the Gestapo periodically moved to arrest, he managed to get Frau Lehár formally reclassified by the Third Reich as an Ehrenärin, an honorary Aryan. What does that actually mean? It means, joked Hitler to Lehár, that she's safe as long as I live. The missus took the joke seriously enough to keep a cyanide capsule with her at all times. The composer's colleagues weren't so lucky. Lehár's leading man in The Merry Widow was a Jew, Louis Treumann. He was murdered with his wife at Theresienstadt at virtually the exact moment the composer was presenting Hitler with a souvenir program of the original 1905 production young Adolf had so adored, a program whose cover showed Louis Treumann as Count Danilo. Lehár's librettist on The Merry Widow, Victor Leon, had his property confiscated after the Anschluss. Understanding what was coming next, he went into hiding. And so a man who had contributed so much to the gaiety of Vienna through his partnership with Lehár starved to death in a garret in 1940. Another Lehár librettist, Fritz Lohneweder, was dispatched to Dachau, Buchenwald, and finally Auschwitz. Here am I with Marcel Pravi, a worldly, courtly Habsburgian, indeed of the same rank of nobility as Baron von Trapp, for you Sound of Music fans. Marcel was a towering figure in Austrian cultural life for three quarters of a century. We're sitting in the Café Sacher underneath a portrait of the Emperor, Franz Josef, as he explains to me the Nazis' attempted Aryanization of operetta.
Is Aryan operetta as good as Jewish opera?
No. Lehár, one of the greatest of all, was acceptable to Hitler's Aryan love. But Lehár's books were by Jewish authors. Mr. Beda, who was killed in the concentration camp in the same year, they played his Land of Smiles in the opera and Lehár conducted. And Lehár either did not help or couldn't help. You don't know how it went. But I know from people who shared the concentration camp with Beda that Beda hoped very much that Lehár would help him. I don't know if he tried to help. I don't know.
The Land of Smiles includes this lovely song by Franz Lehár and Fritz Lohneweder. By the time Tommy Dorsey went into the studio to record it with his young vocalist Frank Sinatra in the spring of 1940, Beda was a prisoner in Buchenwald. 2 years later, Frank left the Dorsey band and Herr Beda was beaten to death in Auschwitz.
Yours is my heart alone. And without you, life holds no charm. Yours, every thought I own, our love the theme of every dream. All that makes life seem worthwhile dwells in your eyes. And the spell of your smile, there is no song half so sweet to me as your voice whispering, I love you, dear. Mm-hmm.
Recalling the awards the composer had accepted from the Nazis, Alan J. Lerner said, "To this day, when I am transported by the music of Franz Lehár, my glass of champagne is rimmed with aloes," which is, of course, a perfect operetta image. At the end of his life, Alan J. Lerner was working on a new text for The Merry Widow, and as the author of Gigi and My Fair Lady, which are really latter-day operettas, he might finally have found the words for that famous Lehár waltz tune. Every once in a while, I used to ask Alan's widow, Liz Robertson, if she'd let me have a peek at his unfinished lyrics for that project, and she never quite trusted me not to sneak off to the photocopier. So until their emergence, we shall just have to make do. This is a fine performance by Jeremy Brett. He was an actor, not a singer, and better known as Sherlock Holmes, the Sherlock Holmes, on television in the 80s, but he makes a convincing Count Danilo in yet another set of lyrics.
Love unspoken, faith unbroken, all life through. Strings are playing, hear them saying, love me true.
No, answers, say you want me too.
All the world. And I love you.
I hear the music play. It carries me away. Oh, sorrow will have none when you are mine and mine alone. Music seems to play, I've not a single thing to say, it's wanting you to know, I love you so.
Love unspoken, faith unbroken, sing love me true. Now the answers say you want me too. All the world's in love with
a song from me to you, Jeremy Brett, Sherlock Holmes, with the great Aussie soprano June Bronhill as his warbling Dr. Watson. And that text was the one written in 1958 for the Sadler's Wells production that made Miss Bronhill a star. words by Ivor Novello's longtime lyricist Christopher Hassel, but not the final word, I think, on a Franz Lehár tune that, like the eponymous widow, is still seeking its perfect other half.
Stein's Song of the Week was presented by Mark Stein and created for Serenade Radio by Brian Savin.